This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Police Off the Cuff Real Crime Stories. I'm your host, retired NYPD Sergeant Bill Cannon, a 27-year veteran of the NYPD. So some amazing goings-on in the Gilgo Beach serial killer case. And you see up on the screen, Rex Uhrman has been indicted for two more victims in regards to the Gilgo Beach serial killer case. The one on the left is Jessica Taylor, and the one on the right is Sandra Castilla. We've learned things about this case based on today's press conference that I think if you could have imagined a horrendous serial killer and handpicked Rex Uhrman, you couldn't have picked or invented some of the things that we now know that he did. And the scary things now that we've learned is that a case goes back to 1993. This beautiful girl up on the screen, Sandra Castilla, was found in Southampton, far out on Eastern Long Island, in 1993. So what does that mean to us? Well, do the math, folks. We're cops. We're not known as mathematicians, all right? That means Rex Uhrman was 29 years old, because that was 31 years ago. Rex Uhrman is 60 years old right now. Does that give you cause for concern that now we know he started 31 years ago? Guess what? I think he started before that. I don't think this is the bottom of when he started. I think he had some more formative years between the ages of 21 and 29. What was he doing then? Did he just start doing this at the age of 29? And when we speak about modus operandi, signature, and those type of things that evolve, he's evolved. His behavior as a serial killer has evolved. And we're going to go over some of those things today. And all of the guessing, all of the things we were all predicting and guessing, now we have some of the answers to it. And we're going to talk about that tonight. This is going to be a very informative and exciting show for everyone tonight. So folks, hang on to your seats. Hang on to your hats. Hang on to your wife, your kids, and your therapy dog, because you're about to enter true crime from a police perspective. You're about to enter the off-the-cuff zone, the police off-the-cuff zone. There has to be some common sense.
Yes, sir. They have the car stopped at 10th and Grant. Michael Biden.
We still don't know who pulled the trigger. You know, folks, we were expecting to see that the two new victims were Valerie Mack and Jessica Taylor. We were surprised to see that it was Sandra Castilla, who you see here in the picture. We were expecting this different. We were expecting it to be Jessica Taylor and Valerie Mack. And there is no doubt in my mind that right now they don't have the necessary evidence to charge Rex Heuermann with Valerie Mack, but it's coming. She's going to be, or he is going to be charged with the murder of Valerie Mack very shortly. But Ray Tierney, the district attorney, and the Gilgo Beach Task Force are very methodical, and they're not going to bring a case against someone before they absolutely have the evidence. So, folks, I have two co-hosts tonight, and one of them has been taking a short sabbatical, but he's back. He's picking up the cannolis in Brooklyn. Anyway, we have with us tonight retired NYPD detective, a crowd favorite, straight out of Brooklyn, Phil Grimaldi. Phil, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, Billy. I just want to apologize to everybody. I haven't been around. I had some family stuff, my wife's parents. We moved them and stuff, but back on track. It was all good things, nothing bad, thank God. But I'm back and ready to rock and roll with this case.
Absolutely. And of course, we have with us tonight, you guys asked me in the chat before the show even starts, is Mike Geary going to be here tonight? I think he's like universally loved, you know, for that calm, enduring features he has. And in fact, there's a lot of Catholics in this audience, and they think he does have powers to hear confession. I don't think he does. But anyway, welcome to the show, retired NYPD sergeant, professor at Albertus Magnus College, attorney. What else does he do? And one hell of a guy. Welcome to the show, Professor Mike Geary.
Hey, Billy. Thank you. Hey, Phil. Good to see you.
Same here, everybody.
Thank you. Good to see you.
You know, the according to the and I'll put this back up on the screen here. According to the New York Times, I'll just give a quick read because Rex Heuermann, who was arrested last summer and has been accused of murdering four women in the Gilgo Beach serial killings on Long Island, was indicted today on murder charges in the deaths of two more women. And you see their pictures up on the screen. Mr. Heuermann, 60, who was pled not guilty to all charges in connection with the first four women's deaths, has remained in jail for nearly a year awaiting trial. In the meantime, investigators turned to six other victims, four women, a man, and a toddler, whose remains, like those of the first four women, were found along Ocean Parkway by Gilgo Beach. On Thursday, Mr. Heuermann was charged with killing one of them, Jessica Taylor, whose partial remains were found near Gilgo Beach in 2011 and then linked to other partial remains found 8 years earlier in a remote wooded area in Manorville, a 45-minute drive east. He was also charged with killing Sandra Castilla, a 28-year-old New York woman whose remains were found in 1993 in Southampton. A long unsolved murder had not been previously associated with the Gilgo Beach investigation. The new indictment followed a recent flurry of activity in the investigation, a 9-day canine search completed last month in Manorville and in a wooded area in Southampton where Miss Castilla's body was found. Last month, investigators also conducted a 6-day search of Mr. Heuermann's home in Massapequa Park, which has been exhaustively searched for 2 weeks last summer after his arrest. So these are the findings, and that, look, what we all hope as people that have been following this case is that every single person in this case that they're investigating, all the bodies they've recovered are connected back to this evil man right here, Rex Heuermann. And that is what we're hoping. Phil, when you heard today that Sandra Castilla was killed in 1993, what were your thoughts? And connected to Rex Heuermann, what were your thoughts?
Billy, I got to tell you, the first thing that came to my mind is tragic. It's tragic that this has been going on since 1993 and he was only arrested recently. But it also needs to be applauded when you read the documents related to the arrest and the indictment today, and you see the stuff that the investigators have uncovered. I mean, this is massive, the amount of evidence that they put in this document. And we know that there's other evidence that hasn't been revealed. This man kept almost what we call a Bible. You know, he was documenting stuff. He was keeping logs. We're going to get into that, I'm sure. When you look at that, when you read that that document, it's really it's just unbelievable. Almost like, and I said it to you before we went on the air, Bill, it's almost like an episode of Criminal Minds. He studied, he had in his possession books on serial killers, and he made quotes in his logs, his entries, that were right out of that book. The book that I believe I'm talking about is called The Mindhunter by John Douglas, an FBI profiler. So when you had Bobby Chacon on the other night, he talked about countermeasures. This is where I think he developed those countermeasures that we'll talk about tonight to keep himself from being found out and caught. But this case is much more expansive than we first thought. I'm just fearful that there may be more victims than the ones you just had on the screen, Bill. This is going back 31 years. Very, very concerning.
You know, Phil, I have no doubt that there are way more victims than we know about. I think that's a given. And thank God there is a task force that has, that basically have the money, they have the funds, the resources, the personnel to run an expanded investigation like this, to follow every lead, to cross every T and to dot every I, because an investigation like this costs a fortune in manpower and equipment. Hey, look, sometimes detectives may have to...
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Fly to another state to investigate something, to interview somebody. And the equipment that, luckily, they have the FBI on board that has some of the most expensive toys an investigation possible. Mike, one of the things that we learned, and I the other night when I had our chief of detectives, Robert Boyce, on with FBI agent Bobby Chacon, I asked Chief Boyce, where do you think Rex Schulman was killing these women? And what do you think he said, Mike?
I would imagine he said at his home.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And one of his rationales for that was that every time one of these women went missing, Asa Ellerup, his wife, and his kids were out of town. That's documented. They were out of town. They either across the sea in another country, or they're on vacation somewhere. But Rex Schulman documented that also. One of the things that made him his personality, being an architect, is being a person of great detail. And he carried over the detail necessary to be an architect into his second life as a serial killer. Your thoughts, Mike?
Yeah, Billy, his mindset, he's detail oriented. You know, he's an architect. You go to architecture school is no joke. He's really very bright. He's very organized. There is no, let stone left unturned. He has a document on his computer from like 21 years ago, detailing, you know, all the steps you need to before you do something, during, afterwards, how to get away with it, targets, all these things. It was all clearly documented. The man is really big into organization. He's really detail oriented. As Phil said, he's looking at the Mindhunter. He's probably thinking in his own mind, you know, do I fit a profile? You know, will I, you know, that sort of thing. Is anybody really out there looking for me? He's very, very attuned to what he's doing. He's not some person who's going off like a madman. No, this is very controlling, very careful. His family's away. He's in his home. He can control the environment. And we do know also that another thing besides Asa Elsrup being away, and we can see that with phone records and business records of hotels, is the fact that on several of the bodies, there's a hair of Asa Elsrup or a hair of a girl that he had lived with for a short period of time.
You know, so, Mike, I found that to be unbelievable. And
that was amazing.
Amazing investigative job, because who would have thought, how did they find out that in 1993, he lived with another woman for a short period of time? How did they find that out? Great investigative skills to find that out. And then not only did they find that out, but the hair that was found on Sandra Castilla's body belonged to that woman.
Right.
Amazing. And they matched it. I mean, if that's not a slam dunk piece of evidence, I'd like to see Michael Brown, the attorney for Rex Heumann, explain that one away.
You know, Billy, in 93, I don't even think the DNA capabilities could have tied that young lady to that hair. But however, it was maintained all these years in evidence. They were able to use it now, and they made a match, DNA match. It's just another nail in the coffin of Rex Heumann. And I agree with you. I think that Michael Brown's got a big, big hill to climb to get out from under when he gets into court on this case. I mean, in the first bail application we saw was a ton of evidence. Now we have so much more. We have two more indictments for two more victims, a total of six, facing all kinds of murder one and murder two charges. This is going to be an extensive and I think very lengthy trial, if you ask me. And Billy, I'm glad you talked about the expertise that's going into this case, the FBI's criminal, the lab that they have in Quantico, Virginia, where they can examine these pieces of evidence. And we have expert technology, experts in technology with regard to phones, with regard to the computer. They were able to pull this information off his computer. I was talking about that Bible, so to speak, where he made these entries. It talked about all different types of countermeasures and recon of locations. He even mentioned about the weather, to check the weather on a day that he was going to go out and meet one of his victims. So with all of those things said, you have experts that can now testify in court with regard to how they were able to pull that information from his computer. The cell phone technology is just unbelievable. And I think you talked about it the other night with Chief Boyce and Bobby Chacon about the DNA, the mitochondrial DNA, and the fact that they were able to use that. I mean, DNA has taken such leaps and bounds in recent years. I guess since 9/11, it's really been fast forwarded to where it is today. So I just want to see, like you said, when you opened the show, Billy, I want to see justice for the rest of the victims as well. And if there are any other cases that they can tie Rex to, hopefully they can do that.
Absolutely. This is the list. And I don't know if you can read this. I don't think I can make it any bigger, but Rex Heumann kept lists. And you see, he has little categories, problems, DNA, tire marks, blood stains, fingerprints, MO, plastic bag, cat litter, witness, trace source of supplies, foot shoe prints, photos, misleaders, police stop. He's worried about getting stopped, truck stuck, fingerprints in gloves. So the gloves he's wearing that he throws away, he's worried about leaving because he knows you can leave fingerprints. How's he know this? Countermeasures. He's studying on how to get away with these things. Plastic bags matched to box, hair and fiber. Supplies. These are some of the supplies. He's prepared for when he's going to kill somebody. Booties, lye, acid, police scanner, rope, cord, saw cutting tools, hair nets, photo film, burn can, foam drain cleaner, body wash, wipes, tops, drop clothes, medical gloves, bags, tapes, large electric clips, ratchet cargo strap. And then he has some code with DS, DS 1 Mill Road, DS 2, dumpster site, next time recon. What recon? A perp is reconning the area because he wants to make sure there's no video. He wants to make sure there are no surprises. So he's doing a dry run before he kills or dumps someone at a certain location. Mike, this is unbelievable.
Billy, it just shows you how smart, you know, we can always say how stupid he is because he didn't realize about the burner phones, but just think of it, how organized, how smart you have to be. You have to keep, you got to get your act together. He did this as methodical as an architect would put together some sort of like engineering schematics and you know, that sort of thing. Luckily, he never threw anything out. And in some ways, that's the beauty of that organized mind. He can't let go of something. He's got there's a little bit of a hoarding thing there. And
you think there was a little bit of a hoarding problem in that house?
I'm a little bit of Captain Obvious right here. Yeah. But that's really amazing that all this stuff is there because it's going to boomerang and be used against him in a court of law. But that goes with his personality. It's all detail. You keep records. You're meticulous. He was for many years a very formidable foe for the police because when you think about that, he's going through things that he needs as if he's almost a crime scene technician. Put on a hairnet. Put on gloves. Put on booties. You know, like all of the things that you would do. Where I'm sorry, you know, you or Phil would do at a crime scene, going through it. That's how thoroughly researched he did his work. It's amazing, and I'm glad the public knows this because hats off to the all the work the task force has done and all the work that the electronic researchers have done and pulled up all this stuff. It's amazing. It's eye-opening. It's fantastic.
Mike, what? Oh, go ahead, Bill.
Based on the Gilgo Homicide Task Force training and experience, the members believe problems, which I just listed what he wrote, problems, to be a guide on issues to avoid apprehension. Supplies to be a reference to what supplies are needed to carry out the serial murders to avoid apprehension and to avoid leaving behind DNA evidence. The DS heading appears to be an acronym for dump site, which is corroborated by inter alia the discoveries of Valerie Mack and Jessica Taylor at two separate dump sites. The vicinity of Mill Road and Ocean Parkway under that same heading is a note regarding dumpster site, which the task force members believe is a reference to how Uman disposed of physical evidence in the manner described. TRG appears to be a reference to target or victim. It is important to note that the known victims thus far are all petite women, which is consistent with the small is good entry in the document, lending further support to the aforementioned conclusion that TRG refers to victims or targets. With regards to the DS section of the document, it is important to note that the human remains of Jessica Taylor discovered in 2003, as well as the remains of Valerie Mack discovered in 2000, were dumped in two locations, one of those locations being the vicinity of Mill Road, which is listed on DS1 Mill Road in the above Word document. He produced a Word document on this. On March 29th, 2011, Miss Taylor's torso, skull, and hands near Ocean Parkway, i.e. dump site. On April 4th, 2011, Miss Mack's skull, hands, and right foot were also recovered near Ocean Parkway, also a second dump site. The recent discovery of this document prompted the April 2024 cadaver search of the Manville area, which did not yield the recovery of additional sets of human remains, thereby reinforcing the task force members' belief that HK planning document refers to human's preparations for either Jessica Taylor and or Valerie Mack. So our questions that we had as to why whether they were researching Manville were just answered in this document. And this document is the new document, of course, the bail application document that was just put out today, which is now 37 pages long and has some unbelievable information in it. Some of it, and you know, some people every once in a while say to me, why do you have to be so graphic? Why do you have to? And I tell them, listen, this is crime. This is true crime. Do you want us to soften up this presentation? This is about a serial killer. Do you want the real information? This is real life. This really happened. This guy really exists right now. So we got to give it to you we'll give it to you as softly as we can. But there's nothing talking soft about a serial killer. Bill,
I just wanted to piggyback what Mike was talking about when he took when Uerman noted wearing booties, a hairnet. Why do we do those things at a crime scene? Like Mike said, we go into a crime scene, we'll probably put on booties, gloves. We don't want to contaminate the crime scene with our own hair follicles or touch DNA or anything of that sort. So he went to great lengths and great detail to try and prevent himself from leaving traces of who the killer would be when these bodies were recovered. He talks about how he rinsed off the bodies and made a note of that. A lot of other graphic things. And as Bill said, we want to try and keep respect for the victims, but we do have to talk about some hard details or else we're not going to be doing justice for the knowledge of the show. He went to great lengths to try and keep himself from being tied to these cases. However, as we know with the technology today, he did make quite a few blunders. I think that that's why they were back in his house recently executing another search warrant. Perhaps they did recover some DNA material. Ray Tierney was asked that at the press conference about that search. And he said that some of the examination does take time. We will know going forward if there was any positive results with regard to that search. So we think that, I mean, in my opinion, I think Billy agrees. Mike said it earlier. We think that these killings took place within his home. And one of the things that he noted was the noise effect with regard to, I would imagine, if there was loud noises coming from his home, that it could alert someone to notify the police. So with all of those things, this is going to be a very, very interesting trial. This is going to probably be a very long trial as well. And I think that we're going to learn a lot of other things when this case does get to trial.
You know, I'm on page 24 of this document, and he has something called pre-prep. And he mentions vehicle inspection. And why would he mention that? Well, the last thing you want to happen to you while you're transporting a body to a dump site is to get pulled over by the police. That actually happened with that other serial killer.
Joel Rifkin.
Joel Rifkin.
My partner arrested Joel Rifkin because we had two of the bodies. Well, one of the bodies washed up in Coney Island, one of them washed up elsewhere. But they put the both cases together in the 6-0. My partner actually arrested Joel Rifkin for two.
Well, he
murders.
Was pulled over for having one of the bodies in the back of his pickup truck. Yes. So the last thing, again, is vehicle inspection, engage T, recon, locate dump site 2, dump site 1, weather report. He wants to know what the weather is before he does his dirty deed. Recon for video cameras. Recon pickup zone for video cameras. So picking up the escort. He doesn't want to be caught on video as the last person seen with this escort.
With that in mind, Billy, he's probably picking a location. All right, meet me on, you know, Fifth Avenue and 40th Street or something. Well, there's a camera there. Can you go down? You know, probably very, generally speaking, well, meet me on this block where he believes there's no video cameras at that time. So definitely reconning the location where he's going to meet his victims. He was on top of that for sure.
Part of the prep he lists is set up stage, holding area, build table, crossbar, hard point, post event. He actually lists a post event list. Destroy file, change tires. Change tires.
He mentioned tire tracks, Billy, in one of his notations.
Burn gloves, dispose of picks, have story set. I guess an excuse. The Gilgo Homicide Task Force believes that the pre-prep is a guide on steps to take in advance of a homicide, inspecting his vehicle, engaging the target, conducting a recon, a survey of video surveillance cameras in pertinent areas, including the pickup zone, checking the weather to ensure for optimal conditions. Prep, on the other hand, appears to be a reference to steps taken closer in time for homicide, setting up the staging area, holding area, and table, crossbar, hard point for the victim. Specifically, the prep section has 5 entries: setup stage, holding area, build table, crossbar, and hard point. The Gilgo Homicide Task Force members are aware that a crossbar is often placed underneath tables to provide further structural support for heavier objects being placed on a table. Additionally, the task force members are also aware that a hard point refers in the field of sexual suspension bondage to a fixed attachment point in the ceiling that supports the weight of an individual being suspended off of the ground, which is corroborated by human significant interest in pornography, where the subject is either suspended, tortured, bound to a table, decapitated, and or their breasts are mutilated, which is consistent with the foregoing notations regarding suspension, as well as the conditions of the described herein. So guys, this is on, I know it's horrific to hear this stuff. This is on page 24 of this bail application thing. Graphic details about his planning, about how he went about it. And that is one of the reasons they went back to the location to see if, in fact, there were holes in the ceiling.
Ready to pop the question and take advantage of 30% off? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com to get 30% off select lab-grown diamonds. That's BlueNile.com for 30% off lab-grown diamonds. BlueNile.com.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
If there were holes in the wall where he put pins in to actually post things on them about the victims, perhaps pictures. Just a detailed individual that you would expect out of an architect, but carried into his second life as a serial killer. Mike.
Yeah, Billy, I'm looking at all of my information that I got today from the press conference. And it was noted that after Jessica Taylor went missing, there was some sort of police report involved saying that a witness saw a dark colored pickup truck in the area around the time that she went missing. And that we think is the dark green and dark, you know, like the dark grayish black and green Chevy Avalanche. It's pretty noticeable that he did order a new Chevy Avalanche in blue right around that time. And he took the
consciousness of guilt, Mike.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Bill. Yeah, absolutely. And that green Chevrolet Avalanche, I think he sold it to his brother or gave it to his brother. It was down in South Carolina, something like that. He's that detail oriented and that willing, as you said, new tires, new car. I mean, he's putting every bit of effort that he has into making sure he does this. He does the deed. He plans it meticulously and he gets away with it so that if anybody ever came to, maybe anybody ever came to his house and said, do you own a Chevy Avalanche, dark green Avalanche or dark color Avalanche? He goes, oh, I have a blue one sitting here in the driveway. You know, look, it's right there. You know, that's how he covered his tracks. It's an amazing press conference, an amazing document that was released to the public today.
Absolutely. Jesse Essex from the chat, drop cloths were to be held by push pins, not tape, according to the documents. You're right. You're absolutely right. I can't get to read this entire 37-page document, but
Billy, how about when he said about the rope that he needed stronger rope, that the rope broke when it was tightened? So that's another thing that he's talking about. And we know that some of the victims were tied, they were bonded. So He was going through the stages of what he was doing, killing, and he would actually make notes post the murder saying, well, I used rope, but it's not strong enough. I need stronger rope. So again, consciousness of guilt. And then he's making notes of it post killing these women. It's horrendous.
100%. He has on page 25 of the report, in his recon reports, video cameras on LIE Route 112 to Route 110 equals 33 old. Vid cameras on Southern State Parkway Route 231 to Exit 30 equals 10 old. T1 info cell number, he lists the cell phone 917-294-4402. Beep voicemail, lists another number. Take down, pick up, hunt too long, scene in area too long. Remember, don't charge gas. Recon for vid cameras in pickup area next time. Don't charge gas because he doesn't want there to be a record of him being at a certain gas station at a certain time. I mean, this stuff is fascinating. This is something, and again, this can get very, very graphic, guys. And, I would say if you can't handle this, you know, you can obviously leave. But I think you guys are true crime aficionados and you should be able to handle this, but I'm just saying, because I always get some kind of message that was horrible what you talked about. Okay, this is true crime, right? He has a section called body prep on page 26 of this report, and he says on this page, wash body inside and all cavities, remove trace evidence, fingerprints and hair, remove trace DNA, remove ID marks, tattoos, and marks. Remove marks from torture. Remove head and hands. Package for transport. So obviously he's doing this at a location where he has total privacy, which we believe. And retired NYPD Chief of Detectives Robert Boyce believes was his home. Dispose of the following. This is also on page 26. Tools and devices. T1 clothes and personal items. Drop cloths. Wipes and towels. Props, toys, wood items. Anything that touched T1. What you wore. Destroy book and computer files. Burn gloves. Dispose of box of plastic bags to avoid trace. Is that a detailed serial killer, Mike?
Billy, that makes it so difficult. He is not someone who acts impulsively and just runs away from the crime scene like an attack, like me out on the street or in a dark park late at night where it leaves the victim and he's running away. This guy planned meticulously before, during, and after. You know, this is where, I said it before, this is where when Hollywood makes these horrific movies about serial killers, it comes from true facts. Because you can't make this stuff up. Nobody would have that kind of imagination, but the human mind does, and he did it. And that he was a formidable opponent. And he did this for what we now see is from the 1990s. Starting back in the early 1990s, I opined like a week ago, this may go back to the 80s. So there is probably all of the 12 poor individuals who were found, their bodies were found, they may all possibly be belonging to Rex. And there might be even more that were just never uncovered. We could have, he might be even a more prolific serial killer than you can imagine. It might be 24 bodies out there. He might have done several in a year, one in a year, whenever Asa wasn't around or anybody wasn't around. But this is, this task force and this investigation is probably going to go on. It might go on for another year easily.
I think longer than that. I absolutely think much longer than that. I want to play a little bit of this from Law and Crime.
Devices, all 350 of them. More on that in a bit. But first, we heard late last week that something was coming, that Rex Heuermann was going to face more charges. And that really shouldn't have come as much of a shock if you've been following this case. Just last month, members of the task force were back at Heuermann's home carrying out boxes and boxes of evidence. turning that red house upside down, and even searching the backyard. And before that, in April, investigators were searching an area of Manorville, where part of Jessica Taylor's remains were found on July 26, 2003. Suffolk County District Attorney Ray Tierney said no other bodies were found during those searches. But now Huerman is accused of killing Jessica Taylor in 2003 and Sandra Castilla in November 1993. This now brings the total number of murders for which Huerman faces charges to six. He had already been charged in the murders of Maureen Brainerd Barnes, Amber Costello, Megan Bartholomew, and Megan Waterman, who had been called the Gilgo Four. Tierney spoke about the murder of Jessica Taylor after Huerman appeared in court.
First off, with regard to Jessica Taylor, that her body was recovered on July 26, 2003, off of just west of Halsey Manor Road in Manorville. She was found on her back. She was decapitated, and her hands and arms were severed just below the elbows. Notably, a tattoo that she had been obliterated with a sharp object. 8 years later, her arms and skull were found on Ocean Parkway.
This is a Law and Crime legal alert. Google Incognito, Huerman's truck that witnesses had noticed.
Time the Suffolk County PD did canvas. And they spoke to witnesses, and the witnesses had observed the night before, about 13 hours prior to the 911 call, they saw a dark colored pickup truck backed up in the vicinity of where off of Halsey Manor Road, where Jessica's body was eventually recovered.
Now, at that time, the DA says that Rex Huerman drove a green Chevy Avalanche. The documents say that Huerman searched the internet for a news story about the body found in Manorville days after Taylor had vanished, and also searched for a new Chevy Avalanche truck, despite his being just over a year old. The DA says Rex Huerman could not be excluded as a contributor to the male hair found under Jessica Taylor's body, but 99.96% of the population could be excluded as a contributor. So basically, through two rounds of DNA testing, mitochondrial DNA and nuclear DNA, the DA is saying the results show it was Rex Huerman's hair found underneath Jessica Taylor's body. Jessica Taylor was murdered in the summer of 2003, and that means the kids were out of school. He had two children. The DA says that Rex Huerman's family was in Vermont with one of Victoria Huerman's kindergarten classmates, and Rex Huerman did not go on that trip. The bail application says, based on post-arrest interviews with witnesses, including Witness 2's family and Victoria Huerman, the Gilgo Homicide Task Force has learned that at the conclusion of the kindergarten school year, Ms. Ellerup and her two children vacationed with Witness 2's family from on about July 20th, 2003 through on or about July 27th, 2003 at Smuggler's Notch Resort that was in Vermont. Now, there has been rampant speculation from some people connected to this case that somehow Rex Huerman's family was involved in these crimes. And it seems like investigators are trying to nip that in the bud right now in this bail application. Victoria Huerman was in kindergarten when Jessica Taylor was murdered, also included in the court document. Long-distance phone records that show Rex Huerman called the resort where his wife and children were staying that week, along with his Palm Pilot records that clearly show, quote, wife in Vermont, for that week.
We were able to corroborate that information through witness statements, photos, and phone and financial records.
Attorney Gloria Allred represents some of the Gilgo Beach serial killer victims. She read a statement for Jessica Taylor's mother as she stood next to her.
Jessica was my daughter. She was loving and compassionate and so funny. She loved to make people laugh. She could always make people laugh. She tried very hard in school. Jessica had two brothers, and they would always play together. She and her brothers were very close. Jessica loved riding her bike. She loved playing board games.
Of killing is Sandra Castilla. Investigators believe she was murdered on November 20th, 1993. Tierney talked about when and how her remains were found.
Two individuals while hunting in that wooded area of Southampton in the vicinity of Old Fish Cove Road in North Sea discovered her body. She was lying on her back with her arms outstretched over her head Her legs were uncovered and her shirt was pressed over her head. The victim suffered numerous sharp force injuries, 25 in all, which we believe were post-mortem. And these were injuries to her face, torso, breasts, left thigh, and in her vaginal area.
I mean, that is just horrific. Sick. Because it also shows that this was 1993. Now, that seems to me the most violent killing out of all of the killings of the other five so far. Mm-hmm. It seemed as though the Gilgo Four, although they couldn't determine cause of death, they just listed it as homicidal. But it seemed that it was most likely asphyxia or strangulation. But when he said there were 25 post-mortem stab wounds, that is sick. That means she was dead. She was dead when he stabbed her 25 times. That's a real sick mind of a serial killer. That is a psycho. That is an absolute evil, psychotic, psychosexual sadist, as Dr. Joni Johnson said when we had her on the show about a year ago. That is absolutely a psychosexual sadist. Mike.
Billy, it just shows a level of rage that after, if it is true that these wounds were inflicted, over 24 of them, after the person has died, that's some sort of an unimaginable rage. If you hate somebody or you something and you kill them, that's one thing. But to then go back and keep, it's overkill. It doesn't make any sense unless there was some rage or he was play-acting something he saw on one of those porn sites or something that he'd visited. He'd visited many of them, and it was all kinds of terrible, torturous stuff. Maybe he was reenacting something. But it's whatever it is, it shows some sort of sick rage, overkill, violence. It doesn't make any sense at all. It's gratuitous. It's unnecessary. And it's it just shows you perhaps that he was in a place where he controlled the environment and he had time to clean up afterwards. I don't mean to be graphic, but he had time to clean up afterwards. Just shocking. That level of violence. But just think about it. He was probably about 29 or 30 when he was doing that. He was not a 60-year-old man. He was like a 30-year-old man doing it in the prime of his life. Very sick.
Phil, your thoughts?
Well, I feel like maybe he manifested over time and became better at what he was doing, it sounds to me like. But I think there must have been some type of rage towards Sandra Castilla. Maybe she insulted him in some way, shape, or form, and I'm not trying to shame the victim here, but it seems like he specifically stabbed her 25 times post-mortem. Like Mike said, some type of rage. He was acting out there. But then I think over time, when you look at his notes, he became better at what he was going to do. And I would think that stab wounds could cause blood splatter and things of that nature. So perhaps he didn't go into those type of things later on with victims. Again, some of them so badly decomposed, they really couldn't tell the cause of death. But at that time, he's much younger. I think he was 29 years old, we figured, Billy. And yes. So I don't know, maybe she said something to him that insulted him. And after he killed her, he acted out with rage. Or perhaps this was just one of the things that was going through his mind at the time to satisfy the sexual sadism, the complete disregard for human life. I feel like he had a thing with that particular victim. That's what I'm getting from it, but, just horrific, horrible. And I'm sorry that we even have to talk about that with regard to these victims, but, these are the facts. And as somebody said, in the chat, welcome to our world. As investigators, we see this stuff, right in your face, and, you have to deal with it. And that's part of the profession, but, it's just terrible, what these victims went through. I mean, and it got worse based on what we saw today in the bail application.
Folks, this is Police Off the Cuff Real Crime Stories. If you like real crime, true crime from a police perspective, then you're in the right place. And if you're not subscribed to us, go on our YouTube, hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, ring that bell, hit the like button, share us with your friends and your family. And if you want to contribute to us, we have a Patreon with four different levels, and we also have a YouTube channel membership with five different levels that is growing so much. In this past month, I think we've grown about 65 or 70% of our YouTube channel memberships, mostly through members who are buying memberships and donating them to other folks that watch our show. So we really appreciate all of our subscribers, our friends, our family, our fans of the Police Off the Cuff family. You know, the thing that really, to me, is disturbing about this is that, yeah, he did beat the police for years. And now we know, at least for 31 years, he fooled the police. And we all know the problems with this case, going back to Chief James Burke, the corruption in the Suffolk County Police Department. But 2 years ago, the Gilgo Beach Task Force was started. 2 months after it was started, they identified Rex Schuerman. That's pretty damn good police work, if you ask me, right? And when Michael Brown, the attorney for Rex Schuerman, says Rex has no criminal history, he says he's innocent of these crimes. It's absolute, it's almost laughable now when he says that. And we see that the evidence that they have against this evil individual, it's just incredible. You know, if this was a death penalty state, I think that the prosecutor would have some leverage to say, I'm going for the death penalty, unless he wants to come clean and take a life without the possibility of parole and tell us everything he did. Because I think that would make it a hell of a lot easier for the investigators. And perhaps after Rex Schuerman is tried, and he will be convicted, I can almost guarantee that, then maybe he'll be willing to cut a deal. And what do they got to offer then? Very little. What they got to offer then is, we'll give you maybe better accommodations. We'll give you more money in your commissary in prison, or we won't put you with a real bad, bad dude next to you. That's all they can promise him in state prison. But he may be such a narcissist that after he gets convicted, he may want to talk, i.e. brag, about what he's done. Mike.
Yeah, Billy, his life is over. He's not going anywhere. He's waived his right to a speedy trial. This is going to take a long time, you know, before he actually gets to a trial date. And I'm thinking, you know, like a year from now. So he's got nothing to look forward to except notoriety. Maybe somebody will write a book, a chapter on him, on the criminal mind. He'll be interviewed by people from magazines, authors, criminologists like Jody Johnson and, you know, Dr. Debbie, people like that, and he'll be memorialized. But he doesn't have anything other than that to look forward to. It would be wonderful if he did plea bargain and he did start naming all of the other where the bodies were of the victims that may had not have been recovered yet. But I don't know. I think this is his one chance to be in the spotlight, because he's behind bars. He's not getting out. He doesn't want to be forgotten. You know, if he can keep this going another year and, you know, that sort of thing. It's all he's got now. And he's a very private person, obviously, during doing all this for many, many years, kept to himself, was very meticulous. But now that it's exposed, I'm thinking like the BTK killer out in Kansas. You know, once you're caught and maybe the ability to talk and just tell the public, this is how I did it. This is how brilliant I was. This is how thorough I was. This is how I could fool the police for many years. You know, I gotcha, you know, kind of thing. That might be attractive to him. So fingers crossed that he elocutes.
Absolutely. Marsha Braga from the chat. As an investigator, do you ever get so cold to the point nothing bothers you anymore? No, never, ever. Do you ever lose your humanity as an investigator? And if you do, it's time to get out.
It's time to retire if that happens.
Time to retire. And, you know, look, We see horrific things. I've seen horrific things. Phil's seen horrific things. Mike's seen horrific things. But you know something? At the end of the day, we go home to our families, you know, and we live normal lives. We go to the gym. We work out. We drink beers with our friends. We go out to dinner with our wives. So you have to have a normal life. All the cops I ever found that had problems, they didn't have a good life outside of police work. And that's when it went head on into what they were seeing at work. And perhaps they started drinking too much. They got depressed. They didn't have anyone to talk to. And that's why cop suicide is so high, because of things like we're just talking about right now. Mary Gold, honestly, in my opinion, there are many more victims. I don't think it was only a limited window he was active. Marie Gold, I 100% agree with you. And I think that this investigation is going to have to go on for a lot more years, because they're going to discover more and more bodies, I think, as they keep this investigation going. Carly, Emily Hayes, but wasn't a cheapskate when he was buying countless amounts of burner phones. Or Rex Schulman was spending thousands of dollars on escorts, right? But he's got 2x4s holding up the roof of his house, right? But he's spending and apparently the house was a hoarder's paradise. It was just, you know, disgusting. It just, you know, I'm not going to hold back because someone may say, oh, his wife was a bad cleaner. It was a disgusting pigsty, all right?
Call it what it was, Billy. It was a shithole. We were told it was a shithole.
Look, people that live like that, in my mind, are mentally ill. They live like animals. That you have to be mentally ill to live like that. And, you know, I'm sorry if I'm offending anyone, but that is my opinion. I've been in shitholes like that, where when you left the house, you wanted to immediately go to the precinct and take a shower and get all of the gigantic roaches that were on your suit jacket, you know, and it's, you know, we have to go in places like that as cops, and we see places like that. I don't want to paint. I don't want to make that what this show is about. Rex Schulman only ever lived in that red house from childhood. First marriage, 90 to 91. Second marriage, 1996, Asa. That house was full of evidence. Connie, I think you're right. And that's they're still just going through all the evidence. Aunt BB2, thank you so much. Aunt BB has gifted 10 police off the cuff memberships.
Thank you very much.
That's why I'm growing so much in the memberships, because of people like Aunt BB2. Thank you so much. Susan 2 is that. Suffolk County Police Department is the best next to Albany County. No, they're not even in the same league as the NYPD. I'll have to disagree with you. We are the NYPD. We are the best in the world.
They're doing a good job, and they have the help of the NYPD. Yeah,
that's right.
So
they're doing a good job.
Everybody, but we have to applaud this investigation, Bill. They're doing a great job.
Doing a fantastic job. Mary Gold, thank you so much for gifting 5 police off-the-cuff memberships. Wow. That's crazy. Carly, thank you for your hard work, Sergeant Bill. Carly, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. This is actually my 3rd time on today. Yeah, I did a show early in the morning. I did a coffee with Cannon in the afternoon. If you've never tuned into that show, it's a little bit different than everything. I shoot it on my phone in my yard, and it's a lot of fun. It's a little lighter than all of this stuff. But, yeah, this case I just feel is so fascinating. I had to go on with my 2 buddies tonight. The Sleuth Fairy. I thought exactly the same thing after this afternoon regarding accommodations being his wager. I think that, look, Rex Schulman is mentally ill. I cannot say, how could you be a serial killer and not be mentally ill, be able to do the things that he did to other human beings? Mike, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Billy. Is all people's, you know, there's not just one thing, like you're mentally ill, so you're crazy and you're not competent to stand trial and they can't try you, you know, that sort of thing. No, there are so many different levels and degrees and different, diagnoses of mental illness. He probably does have some sort of real strange narcissistic personality disorder that just developed over many years. He knew exactly what he was doing. He planned it out meticulously. You know, people talk about the Holocaust and what very bright people did, Nazis did to people, and the exterminations. that level of barbarity by very bright, well-educated people, you know, and they say, they reference the banality of evil. He's not running around howling at the moon. He's your basic, other than being 6'5" and 300 pounds, he's a basic person living his life on a quiet street, and he's always planning murder. And that's what he thinks about. That drives him. That gets him going. It's a challenge to do all the operation and to get away with it. That gives his life meaning. Yeah, he's crazy, but he's bright and he's smart and he's got and he's perfectly capable of understanding and appreciating the evil and the wrongness of what he did. There's no challenging that. So therefore, he's completely competent to stand trial and to get whatever punishment is deemed worthy for him.
Absolutely. Barbara Crossley, how long will they wait before going to court? Will they wait to find more victims of his before going to court? No, they're ready. They want to take this to trial as quickly as possible. The problem being is that there is so much discovery that his defense attorney hasn't even had a chance to go through a tenth of it yet. So he will keep trying to push this case off so he can, if you believe him today, he said, oh, this morning was the first time he had found out about this new evidence. Bullshit. Defense attorneys and prosecutors talk all the time. And he knew about this. Guarantee he knew about it. And he's acting like, gee, I just found out about it today. Gee, let me scratch my head. And I don't mean to goof on the guy. He's an excellent attorney. He's doing his job. He's got an uphill battle. I think that Rex Schulman absolutely wants his day in court. He's a narcissist. Now the only thing he has left are his days and weeks and months in the spotlight when this trial finally begins and they present their evidence. And this trial is going to be a circus once they start blaming James Burke for being an accomplice of Rex Schulman. And then we bring in some of the other colorful characters involved in this case. Phil.
Yeah, I just want to piggyback what Mike was saying with regard to his state of mind. Now, you know, he's caught, he's arrested, all this evidence is being brought against him. He's going to sit with his lawyer and he tells his lawyer, it's not me, I didn't do it. Now, Michael Brown has to mount a defense based on his client. He can't put words in his mouth. He can't tell him how he wants to plead or what to say. So he's got to try and mount a defense based on the fact that he's saying it wasn't me, it was somebody else. So he's going to do that. He's going to pick apart the evidence. He's going to challenge it. But what the point I wanted to make, what regard to Mike was saying, that's why Uhrman is saying what he's saying, that he's not guilty. He wants to relive it. He wants to hear every detail. He wants to hear about the dismemberment. He wants to hear about the cell phone activity. He wants to hear about the recon and all the people that saw him. He wants to relive it. This is what serial killers live for. Now, post-conviction, we'll talk about, maybe there's a possibility that they'll say, we'll take the death penalty off the table, tell us what you know, give us other victims. At that time, perhaps there could be some type of a negotiation, but don't kid yourself. Rex Schulman is going to enjoy every minute of this trial, and it's an unfortunate thing for the victims and for the victims' families that they're going to have to hear some graphic stuff, but he may... you know, be in ecstasy over it. He may be enjoying every minute of it. It's part of the criminal justice system, and it's typical of serial killers. That's why he's pleading guilty and he's not coming forward right now and giving everything up. He wants to relive it again. And then at some point when everything's exhausted and they're talking about, life in jail for the rest of it, life in jail and he's never getting out. Perhaps at that point, maybe he'll think about being close to family members or something and maybe cooperating with police. And, maybe people are going to write books about him and he'll want that. Again, he's going to be famous. And in his mind, this psycho mind, these are the things that he wants.
Magical Mary from the chat. Professor Mike Geary, New York has to bring a case within 6 months, so he must have waived speedy trial. That is correct.
He absolutely did waive
the speedy trial. But you know something, Phil, just to correct you, and I don't mean to, it's in a bad way, New York no longer has the death penalty. I forget what year they did away with it. We used to have it.
Right. I was talking about with the murder one charges. Yeah, that would be for a death penalty case. You're right about that. There is no death penalty. But perhaps if they could get them going over state line, they could get that in a federal case. But I guess that's down the line. Yeah. There has to be some type of end game for him. You know, there has to be an end game. And the end game is he's convicted. He's going to jail forever. And then maybe we could get some information out of him. You're right, though, Bill. The death penalty was taken off the books.
Jesse Essex, I never mean when I say someone's mentally ill, I don't mean they're insane. Because you could be mentally ill and you could be working as, a very high-level job. It doesn't mean that you're incapable of understanding right from wrong, which is the standard for an insanity plea. So, no, he's 100% competent, and I believe he understands right from wrong. However, I believe he's mentally ill. I believe to be a serial killer, you have to be mentally ill.
And just look at his computer searches that he did in the last bail application. Those computer searches, that alone, forget killing all these women, he was mentally ill with that. And then you add the serial killer component to it. He's definitely mentally ill. He's not insane, though. That's the difference. And we've talked about that in previous cases.
Yes, I never meant to say that he's incapable of understanding right from wrong. It's the insanity plea is a very high mountain to climb, and very few people a judge will allow an insanity plea unless someone is legitimately insane, like Crazy Eddie. You know, these prices are insane. You know, but that they don't give that plea very often. And when I see someone's mentally ill, look. I said it before, when someone lives in a hoarder house, I believe they're mentally ill. There's something missing in their brain that allows them to live in filth and squalor like a farm animal. And, I don't mean to pick on, maybe I do, Asa Ellerup's house cleaning, but the house, from what I understand, talking to some police out there that were in that house, said it was an absolute disgusting, disgusting house. So use your imagination of the most disgusting house you've ever been in and think what that's like and think how you feel about the people that live there when you see someone that lives in squalor. Mike.
Yeah, Billy, that's the thing about the family dynamics, because Ray Tierney was very careful to to talk about the hairs found and the timing of the girls going missing and the pieces of their body being discovered. And he was very clear that Asa was away on vacation with the children and, that sort of thing. So people have wondered about their relationship. I am sure it wasn't a happy one. I'm sure he wasn't a very a dad who would come home at 4 o'clock, and just like Ward Cleaver in the old TV show. No, he probably was a very miserable person, control freak to live with, because he was a control freak about everything. We could see that from all of his writings. But, it appears as we keep going and going and going with this investigation and more information comes to light that he probably was able to do these things. She wasn't there, and she probably knew he may have had some X-rated proclivities in terms of maybe searches, maybe pictures and things like that. But she probably learned not to ask. Better not to ask and find out anything and just live that life. And I'm sure, as one person suggested in the chat, they may not have even slept in the same bedroom. They may have totally really gone their separate ways where they're just really a couple, married couple, but in name only, that their lives were very, very separate. He had his area of the house. She had her area of the house. And it must not have been a very fulfilling relationship. But as we go on, I think we could, be very careful about blaming her for knowing and participating. No, she probably didn't want to know what he was doing. And I'm sure she didn't participate in any way, shape, or form with any of his acts towards these girls.
Muhammad Fazi, can someone sit with him professionally and give us some insight, real insight, hands-on? Muhammad Fazi, I'm going to really call you doctor. No, not until the trial's over. No doctor, no serial killer expert, no one, no psychologist will be allowed to speak with him right now until this trial is over. Because even there, although there is doctor-patient confidentiality, his attorney would advise him not to speak to anyone because you never know what could be leaked about it. So people will be studying Rex Heuman for years after this trial is over, but it's going to have to wait. He's what I would say, and I'm not a serial killer expert by any stretch of the imagination, but he is a classic serial killer.
Oh, yeah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
And we spoke the other night about organized and disorganized offenders. And he has the traits of both. And we spoke about dismembering bodies. Dismembering bodies is a trait of a disorganized offender. But you can argue, well, but Rex Heuman is organized. He's educated. He owns a home. He owns a car. He has a job. He owns a business. He's intelligent. He's educated. He has ability to travel around. But he does some things that show a disorganized personality. And one of them is the dismembering of his victims. Phil?
Yeah, I think that you have both traits here, organized and disorganized. When they talk about dismembering the body is disorganized, but yet he went to great lengths to be organized with regard to even checking the weather when he was going to go meet one of his victims. And one of the things that I keep thinking about is they said in the press conference that they don't believe that he killed all of the escorts that he met with. So what was the reason that he killed the ones that we know about? That's something that would be interesting to hear from Rex Heuman's mouth. He did seem to have a type, though. I think believe the type was a petite with light brown hair. So that was the type that he wanted to engage with. You know, this is very, very classic of serial killer. And I think you're right, Billy. They're going to be studying Rex Heuman for many, many years. And I think that there will almost be like a reference guide with regard to the actions that he took and the things that he did with investigations going forward of other serial killers. Now, I hope there's never another serial killer again in the United States. But I think that we'd be foolish to think that there isn't going to be other serial killers. So there's things, particular things that details of this case that we can take, we'll study them, and we could use them for future investigations. I really would love to also know just when he started this killing spree and how many victims there really are.
Absolutely. Let me play a little bit more of this from Law and Crime.
Cannot be excluded as the contributor of those two hairs on her body.
That same male hair or extract therefrom was brought to the same outside lab for nuclear DNA testing. And once again, the results came back, and which found it was 4.347 times 10 to the 332 power more likely to have come from a person genetically identical to Rex Yearman than from an unrelated individual. So that's 4.347, and then you move that decimal point over 332 times to get the odds. Again, an astronomically large number.
Now, what about that female hair? This was back in 1993. Tierney and investigators say a woman Rex Yearman was living with at the time at his house in Massapequa Park, one of her hairs was also found on Sandra Castilla, according to investigators. But they point out that this former girlfriend of Rex Yearman had moved out of the Red House in Massapequa Park 2 months before Castilla's murder. They say Yearman's mother had also moved out of the home. Now, the task force says it has seized 350 electronic devices from Rex Yearman's home.
That is unbelievable. Incredible. Yeah. 350 electronic devices. Do you think they've gone through all of them? There's no way. And when we listened to Ray Tierney in the press conference, he also said that most of them are encrypted.
Right.
So to get into them, we need like a scientist that can get into this encrypted device. And they're still working on some of them. But some of the evidence they recovered from these devices are just incredible. Incredible evidence in this case. For example, the Word document. I believe that was in one of these encrypted sites. And that is, you know, is an amazing piece of evidence, Mike.
Yeah, Billy, his characteristics of being organized and being a totally organized person and, you know, meticulous in every way. And his hoarding, probably his hoarding characteristics, it's all about details, all about keeping things straight, organization. And it's his downfall. If he had the ability, the ability in his mind to clean up everything in his life in terms of the junk that was associated with these killings, as good as he could meticulously, you know, get rid of gloves, booties, hairnet, you know, all those other things that you can get rid of, that he can get rid of. He kept these things. It's shocking in a way that someone who was so organized, it's their greatest strength, but in a way now it's their greatest weakness because there's this electronic breadcrumb trail that could never, ever be erased. And so thankfully, as organized as he was, it led to his downfall because he just cannot get rid of all those little things. And every one of those things that they ever go through, and they might never get through all of them. They may never get through all of them, but they're going to be at his trial. As many as they can are going to be at his trial. And that's a good thing for the state because it doesn't depend on a witness testifying as to what they remember seeing, time of day, whether that they had glasses on, you know, memories fading, you know, things like that at all. It's all fixed on in an electronic device, and a record can be made of it, and it's dispassionless, and it's excellent for a jury to hear. So that's really fabulous evidence. And his greatest strength was also his Achilles heel.
Absolutely. You know, I wanted to touch upon the fact we had said, and there's quite a bit of evidence that the killing took place in his home. And retired NYPD chief of detectives, Robert Boyce, the other night, came out with that right away and said, some of the evidence is that every time one of these girls went missing, his wife and kids were on a trip somewhere. That's number one. Number two is that he needed a very quiet place that he could come and go without perhaps being seen and to do the horrific things he was going to do. You couldn't do it in a hotel room. You couldn't do it out in public. So he needed a place that he also set up for the reasons that he had in mind. And we'll just use the word, and it's in the report, torture. torture, Stockholm syndrome was in the report, that as if some of his victims, as in Stockholm syndrome, identified with him and then didn't go against him. That's classic Stockholm syndrome. All of these things were in the evidence that, you know, and other, that there was actually physical evidence that started inside that house that indicates that that's what occurred. Now, we don't even know 1/100th of the evidence that they have. And just knowing what we know now, I think, and I didn't always think this, I think the murders occurred inside the house. And potentially also the dismemberment happened inside of the house. And when we talk about modus operandi, signature, and staging is classic because he would dump the bodies in different locations. And was that to mess with the police? Was that to throw off the police? Or was that part of his bizarre behavior? Phil?
Yeah, based on that Word document, I think it's very clear he needed a secure location to do all the things that he talks about with regard to towels and wipes and gloves and the booties. And he couldn't do this in just any location. I felt pretty early on that these murders took place within his home. And I think that the fact that you have all of these things listed in that Word document, you couldn't do them, as Bill said, you couldn't do them in a hotel room. You couldn't carry on all these different things. I mean, he talked about washing the victim's bodies, preparing the body for transport. He needed a secure location. I think it's the basement of his home. I just have a feeling, I mean, it's just my own opinion, that perhaps his family wasn't even allowed down in that basement area, unless it was to do laundry or something of that nature. He probably had a work area within that basement that he would set up the table. He talks about the table and setting up the table and all of that. So, you know, I think it's pretty certain based on this document today that the murders took place within that home, went to great lengths to try and cover it up and not connect any evidence of himself with those victims' bodies. With regard to that document, it was found in a hard drive that was in the basement. And even though he used a program to erase it, it talked about space in the computer that even though it was erased, unless something was put over in that hard drive, was stored over that information, that's why they were able to get it. So he did make a mistake there. He thought he got away running a program to erase it. However, it was still in that hard drive. They were able to extract it from the hard drive. And some of the things Bill has on the screen right now.
Consider a hit to the face or neck next time for takedown. Get sleep before hunt. Too tired to create problems. So more sleep and noise control equals more playtime. And he's talking about using tacks to hang something from the ceiling instead of tape. I mean, this is like a torturer's guide to perfecting the craft.
On in the bail document, we will see that.
Yeah, John Douglas. He created FBI profiling. He was part of that. And he wrote the book.
And Rex Uhrman, in an effort not to get caught, used that book.
Is that unbelievable? That's what we were talking about before as countermeasures. Mm-hmm. So he was studying how the police work and what to do to not get caught, which we know as countermeasures. We used other language, recon. That's a military term, which means reconnaissance. He would recon the areas he was going to dump the bodies at to make sure there was no video camera, to make sure there was no red light cameras, to make sure there was nothing there that could potentially get him caught. He would recon the areas where he was meeting the escorts so as not to get caught on video. So this was well thought out, well planned, and an organized offender. Even though we spoke before about the other traits he had that made him have traits of a disorganized offender. So this is all quite fascinating, but this evidence is just, in my opinion, insurmountable for an attorney to be able to defeat this evidence against this guy. Mike?
Yeah, Billy, the thing that blew my mind is the idea that he would buy the book Mindhunter and read it. And as you say, it's a countermeasure. He's thinking he wants to see the investigation, if there is any, at the very beginnings. I'm not sure what year he bought it, but he wants to see what the FBI playbook looks like. What if they're called into the case, if any of the bodies are discovered, what would they see? He wants to know, what would they see through a law enforcement detective's mind? But what would it be to be in your shoes and in Phil's shoes when you're sitting there at the crime scene? How do you analyze that crime scene? He wants the FBI's playbook for that. That's dastardly. That's brilliant. That's conniving. It's amazing that he would go to that level so that he could try to do anything he could in order not to to throw off the scent, not to fit into maybe any particular classification of serial killer or killer that the FBI had developed. You have to respect the man's intelligence, his IQ, his cunning, his ability. He's a formidable opponent, and this is just remarkable, the effort that he went through and how organized he was. Just remarkable.
Pico and Sepulveda from the chat, what was the sexual component to these crimes? And I'll answer this, and I'll let Phil and Mike both take a shot at this. Like, first of all, who was he killing? He was killing escorts. He was killing sex workers, right? So there right there is the sexual component to that. To a serial killer or to someone that gets off on murdering someone, that in itself is a psychosexual sadistic enjoyment they get from this. And it's right from serial killer experts that we've had on the show, like Dr. Joni Johnston. She explained in great detail the satisfaction and the sexual component to a serial killer, especially one that is targeting sex workers. Phil.
Yeah, I think you went right to the source. Dr. Joni explained that he may have been having sex with them and reaching ecstasy in a sexual nature, but then the killing brought a separate euphoria to his sick and demented psychosexual mind. So that's the sexual components. Even though the killing is not so much as a sexual act, it's euphoric for the psycho sadist that Rex Ullman is.
Mike, same question.
Yeah, Billy, I think you're right. I think it's the sexual act, but it's also the control during the sexual act and afterwards. And you could put your hands on that person's neck. You could stab them later. I mean, it is just, it's all about control. It's all about control from the sex act to the killing, having that person's life in your hands. And you are going to determine how and when that person is going to die. Very, very, it's mind blowing. Yeah.
You know, Mike, it's almost like a rapist. Like,
yeah.
People will argue that rape's not about sex, that it's about power, it's about humiliation, it's about exerting your power
control.
Over someone.
Yeah,
control.
Degradation of the victim.
Right. And this is that to an extreme, extreme level.
Yeah.
Rex Huerman's planning, he still managed to leave DNA evidence at the scene of both victims. And you know, he thought, destroy all evidence, destroy all files. Well, you know, Suffolk County Police was able to pull up these incredibly detailed documents that indicate his involvement. So despite all his best efforts to do so, we were able to find this evidence. But with Sandra Castillo, the fact that we're talking about a victim from 1993 that opened.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
It's up the case even more. And that just tragically suggests that there's far more victims than we're even looking at now. Are we looking at 10? Are we looking at 13? Are we looking at 20?
And it takes us back to the same time period as Karen Vergata in 1996, and she was sadly dismembered.
Yes.
Her name kind of came up during the press conference. Also, Valerie Mack is mentioned in these documents. Rex Huerman is not charged with murdering her right now, but you know, they said this is not over. They're going to keep looking. They're still sifting through data. There's probably still DNA testing going on. Do you expect more, Josh?
So we were discussing that right at the on the tail of the application coming out. We would assume they would have probably given some more. If they had more DNA evidence, it would have been included in this. So they probably have other evidence, photographic evidence, video evidence, that could connect some of the other victims, just not DNA evidence, or they would have kind of grouped it all together because, you know, regarding Valerie Mack and things like that. Circumstantially, and just for those in your audience who don't know, you know, the fact that they have forensic evidence, DNA evidence that links Rex Huerman to Jessica Taylor. And because we have both Jessica Taylor and Valerie Mack were found both in Manorville and both in Ocean Parkway, we can now say that there is a definitely good chance, of course, not proven in the court of law, there is a good chance that Rex Huerman has also killed Valerie Mack. And because of the where Valerie Mack's body is found on Ocean Parkway, remember, Peaches, baby Peaches, is found 150 feet next to Valerie Mack. That truly can't be a coincidence. And then, of course, if Peaches, baby Peaches is there, then Peaches is there, who's found in Hempstead. So with this information coming down about Jessica Taylor, that suggests that Rex Huerman is also connected and guilty in three other crimes. Of course, not guilty until proven so in a court of law, but circumstantially, it looks like so.
You know, one of the interesting things that I just wanted to mention, too, is that why Gilgo? Why did he dump the bodies there? Geographically, Gilgo is about 15 or 16 miles from where Rex Huerman lives. And it looks much closer because if you could go across the water, it looks like a stone's throw away, but you have to drive around and it's about, so it's probably about 15 minutes, 20 minutes from where he lives. But what's common in a lot of serial killers is like they like to revisit the place where they dump the bodies. They like to revisit. That's why they keep trophies, souvenirs, because they get a thrill by reliving that experience. How many times do you think Rex Huerman either drove by or stopped near Gilgo just to get that feeling, that murderous feeling, whatever thrill, whatever psychosexual deviance he got from it? How many times did he go by Gilgo? How many times did he go to Manorville to relive that? And now we know this goes back to 1993. So we know could go back much further when Rex Heumann was 29 years old. That's a scary thought. When these people go on these shows, these talking heads, I call them, and they predict that there could be 10 more bodies, 15 more bodies, 20 more bodies. We don't know. He ran silent. He ran deep for right now, we know, for 31 years and got away with this for that long. Folks, we're going to keep following this case, of course, because it is hugely, hugely interesting. Information is starting to come out that makes this case even more unbelievable. But life is always stranger than fiction. Phil, your final thoughts.
My final thoughts. I want to make a quick comment about the location. I think it was twofold. I think it was what you said, Billy. He wanted it to be close to where he lived. He could relive it. But also, the location is very, very dark at night. It was easy to secrete himself get rid of the bodies there. Just want to mention the names: Jessica Taylor, Maureen Brainerd Barnes, Melissa Bartholomew, Megan Waterman, Amber Costello, Sandra Castilla, and Valerie Mack. Some of the murders he's charged with, some he's not. But I think we had to mention those victims just to give them, hopefully some justice with this case going forward. I said early on in the beginning of the show that it was needed to be applauded, and it was also tragic that it was so many years before he was captured. However, it needed to be applauded. I mean by that, the investigation needs to be applauded that they're doing such a great job. God bless these victims' families, and God bless these victims. And let's just hope that going forward, we're going to find out everything that this animal did.
Absolutely. Professor Mike, your final words.
I can't top what Phil said. He's absolutely right. Pray for the victims' families and applaud the task force. Absolutely.
You know, the task force has done an amazing job and realized they've only been together for 2 years now, and this case goes back 31 years. So in 2 years, think of the amount of work these guys did. 2 months after the task force was established, they identified Rex Heumann, the Gilgo Beach serial killer. The Long Island serial killer, Lisk, as he is known. So, folks, I want to thank everyone for tuning in tonight. We're working really, really hard on this case. We're working really, really hard on the Police Off the Cuff channel. And I want to thank also Professor Mike Geary. He has no life, so he's always available. When I call him up, he's like, I'm ready. And he goes and hits the books and studies and prepares for this. Phil has a little bit more of a life, and he was on a sabbatical for a couple of months, but he assures me he's back. He picked up a few tons of cannolis. He doesn't have to drive all over Brooklyn to pick them up. He's got the meatballs stored in the freezer. He's got the regatta cheese, the manigot. He's got it all. So he's going to be on the show on a more steady basis. Yes, so, folks, this is Police Off the Cuff Real Crime Stories. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you the next time, and God bless.
Stay safe, everyone.
One episode, just ain't enough.